This is an OpenView Labs exclusive for Chief Content Officer Magazine.
Thanks again for tuning in with us. I'm Joe Polizzi, publisher of Chief Content Officer Magazine and founder of the Content Marketing Institute. I'm so pleased to have Jay Baer with us from Convince and Convert and co-author of The Now Revolution. Jay, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Always good to talk to you.
All right, fantastic. So we're going to go through just a few minutes of questions. I know when we last sat down to talk, you were talking about the legacy of Facebook will not be the Facebook.com that we know of today. Can you talk me through a little bit what you mean by that and what really you believe is the true influence of Facebook that we need to be paying attention to?
Sure. I think it's sort of a everything old is new again scenario. You may remember a time when a company would send you CDs in the mail, and they would hope that you would use those CDs to get online, but not the true web, and a very special version of the web that they called AOL. That looks an awful lot to me what Facebook is trying to do. They want to be the plumbing of the web and sort of have a layer of the web that they control that really has components of all the things that we do. So you've got Facebook messaging. What does that feel like to you? Email. They have Facebook credits, which feels an awful lot like a payment system. You've got pages. You've got personal pages. You've got video. Now you have Facebook deals. So everything that becomes some sort of cultural foothold in the web, they're trying to replicate so that everybody stays within the Facebook universe. What powers that philosophy is the open graph. This notion that every piece of content, whether it's a photo, a video, a status update, information about you, all of those run around in the Facebook universe like little bits of flotsam and jetsam that they can mine to serve up more relevant ads and that we as marketers can use to increase our own relevancy in our own context. So what you have now just in the last couple of weeks with Facebook announcing their new commenting system, right, where you can use Facebook to leave comments on blogs the same way you could previously with Discuss or Intense Debate, that's just another piece of this open graph, Facebook is the plumbing umbrella that they're trying to launch. And I think 2 years from now, we'll look back and say, wow, what happened? All of a sudden, these guys have the keys to the kingdom.
So if you had $10,000 and you were going to buy some stock into Google or Facebook, what would you choose at this point?
If I had to choose right now, I would probably say Facebook because they have, if you look at what they have versus how well have they monetized what they have, I would say it's not fantastic. Conversely, mm-hmm. Google has monetized the crap out of what they have because they've got a 10-year head start. So I think going forward, Facebook to me is the more important and more dangerous company. As I said in a blog post this week that's coming out, imagine if every time you had to do a search on Google, they said, okay, I know that you want to find information about content marketing, but before we give you search results, what we'd like to know is whether you're a man or a woman, how old you are, what high school you went to, what music you like, maybe what food you like. Can you list some of your friends? Could you upload some photos of yourself too? That's essentially the way Facebook works. They have so much more information about us than Google ever has or ever could have, and ultimately, information equals revenue.
Boy, I know, it's so all-encompassing, it's hard to even grasp how much data they actually have about us. So are you concerned from a privacy standpoint as an individual and a business with Facebook?
I am concerned about what information they have at their disposal. As a consumer, as a marketer, it's the greatest opportunity we've ever seen in a lot of different dimensions. You hope that they recognize now, after having some privacy-related dust-ups, that there's a slippery slope there, right? That there's only so far they can push this envelope. But by the same token, as I tell people every day, Facebook is a business. And as a business, they are interested in their success first, in your success as a byproduct.
Yeah, you're right. It does come down to that. And, I think that it's amazing. I mean, they'll go public this year and we'll see some stuff happen. But I think your point about the potential, the revenue potential that they haven't even skimmed the surface of this yet amazes me. I mean, they're already doing whatever, a couple $1 billion. And, it's just microscopic compared to where we'll see them in a couple years. All right, let's change directions just a little bit. So in your fantastic book, The Now Revolution, you talk about social media, when you're talking about conversion, that you're winning fans at a few time versus winning in total or winning like mass media was in the past. So I think it's an incredibly important point. You know, as when we talk about social media being personal engagement, whereas a lot of companies out there will say, hey, this is just another tool that I can, you know, spread my mass message as far and wide as possible. Explain to me how companies at a practical level can really focus on winning converts at a few at a time.
I don't know that you have another option. And that's because social communication is almost entirely opt-in. We forget that. But people only see your tweets if they choose to do so. People only see your Facebook status updates if they choose to do so. People only read your blog if they choose to do so. People only watch your YouTube videos if they choose to do so. They only download your ebooks if they choose to do so. They only watch your SlideShare presentations if they choose to do so and listen to your podcasts. And every other dimension of content marketing is wholly opt-in. And if it's not opt-in, it's typically you as my friend say, via some sort of mechanism, typically Facebook, I liked this content, and then I will see the fact that you liked it in my own newsfeed. But even that is reaching people one at a time or a few at a time. I'm aware of it now because you're aware of it. So this notion that somehow you can use social communication to reach people unilaterally, to reach people without their consent, is generally speaking a fallacy. There's really no mechanism to do that. You put up a YouTube video, it's not as if people automatically just sort of turn their browsers to your video and consume it. It really is hand-to-hand combat. There's no such thing as social media grenades. There's only social media bayonets.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's always been the case with, I mean, even if you looked at, you created a print custom magazine. I mean, they're only going to open that up if they want to.
If they already have a relationship, yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I think the difference is it's such on a different scale when it comes to a company touching you via social media or other online mechanisms, and it's all trackable some way, shape, or form. You know, I want to go right to that because I think it's important, especially with your background in digital and email marketing optimization. So, I mean, you know, probably more than anybody else when I talk to you, you know the whole quant side of this discussion. So what do you think about the rise of the title marketing technologist? Is it a real title? Are we seeing this? And do you see companies struggling to align the creative side with the marketing technology side?
Yeah, I'm glad to see optimization and kerneling and tweaking getting the kind of attention that it has deserved for a long time. I used to own a digital marketing optimization company, and so it's fantastic to see now that people believe in it enough to actually staff it inside a company. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long time coming. We've been able to do some pretty fantastic optimization of email marketing, of banner ads, of landing page optimization, of a number of other forms and facets of digital marketing for many, many years. What I find somewhat deliciously ironic is now that people are all excited about social media, they feel like, oh, we need to get a marketing technologist on staff to really work through social media testing and optimization. But yet, social media is the less testable and less optimizable of that whole field. You can't run an A-B test on a tweet. You can't run an A-B test on a Facebook status update. You know, the tools and the methods of doing true optimization in the social web don't really exist yet. They will, but they don't right now. So I find it funny that people are using social media as a reason to staff for technology and optimization, where we should have been staffing for that, you know, around email and pay-per-click and SEO and landing pages and all these things we've been doing for 10 or 15 years. But it is a challenge to get both the creative side and the math side on the same side.
So, I mean, let's talk about that for 1 second, because I think it's an important point where a lot of companies struggle with, you know, how do I measure my content marketing? And you were just talking about a lot of different channels, whether that be search or email or, you know, digital magazines or whatever. Is that the place where they should start? Like if somebody if a big brand, which, you know, you and I run into a lot, say, hey, we're creating a lot of different content in different channels, but I'm not really sure if I'm getting the bang for my buck. Where do I start when it comes to, you know, this idea of, you know, the marketing technologist and really tracking performance from that standpoint?
Yeah, especially on the content side, it's all about customer lifecycle and purchase funnel. When people say we're not sure if we're getting our bang for our buck, my question is always, well, what does bang for your buck look like to you?
Yep.
Does that mean sales? If so, how do we track that? Does that mean leads? If so, how do we track that? It's all testable. It's all measurable. It's all knowable. But you have to really have an understanding of the different steps in that purchase funnel and how content and content consumption moves people through that funnel. So most companies now, especially big companies, fortunately, believe that content equals benefit at some level. What they don't quite understand yet in many cases is what kind of content to create, and more personally, what questions those individual pieces of content answer for prospects. Mm-hmm. Because I think about content marketing the same way I thought about website strategy, which is what I did in my initial career, which is, what questions do people have for you? People don't go to a website unless they have questions. It's not like, hey, I'm going to go to some corporate website to be entertained. They go to a website only because they have questions. So if you can understand what those questions are likely to be and answer those questions as efficiently as possible, that's the game. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of companies making content but not really knowing why.
Do you believe in the idea that, I mean, if the whole idea is for us to answer those questions as a company better than anyone else, at least more and more findable than anyone else, I mean, isn't it our job? We're going up against Google and we're going up against, let's say, the best trade magazine in our niche. I mean,
yeah.
do you buy into the idea that brands today need to be creating the best content in their niche?
100%. I think every company needs to think of itself as a magazine and as a newspaper and as a TV station and as a radio station. If you don't get out there and tell people the truth about your company, somebody else is going to tell their truth about your company.
That's so true. I you know, if I had one wish, it would be that non-media brands could at least feel that they could create the best content on the planet in their niche. And I think we're getting there. But it's amazing. They're almost defeated. It's like, oh, we can't do that. That's not us. We're not a publisher. I'm like, well, yes, you are. You better start thinking about it right away. All right. So, well, let's end up on this one. So I know how much you stay on top of the latest, in the industry on social media and digital marketing. For you, for Jay Bear, how do you, you know, tell me your top sources for information on how you stay in front of the curve, so that you can then educate your audience and write such great books?
Thank you. You know, I am sort of a skimmer. There's obviously individual particular blogs that I tend to consume at a high rate. I check social media today quite a bit because they do curate a number of different sources, and I find that to be an efficient way to go. My friends at Social Media Examiner always have very practical, you know, sort of how-to content, which sometimes is pretty interesting. And of course, a lot of the other folks in the social media and content marketing space, like yourself and Ann Handley and other folks that you and I know well. But the reality is, what I try and do is subscribe to almost every newsletter, and I get most of my stuff via email, almost every newsletter that aggregates other stuff. So whether it's Reagan stuff or PR News or Smart Brief, I'm on the Smart Brief Advisory Board, and I think they do an amazing job with content curation. Any sort of resource that has a collection of great stuff. I probably read 25 newsletters a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and pull out the gems and the nuggets out of that. Of course, I have my own newsletter that does the same thing called the 321. And then I also am really, really fortunate to learn a lot from my clients. I do a lot of work with big corporations, but also a lot of work with agencies. And in so doing, each agency has, you know, 10 or 20 clients that I get involved in. So in any given week, I might be involved in 20 to 40 separate client circumstances around social media and content marketing. And so that breadth of participation is really, really useful for me to kind of see how different types of companies in the industry are approaching these very important questions.
Mm-hmm. So it would, if I'm a marketing executive listening to this podcast, you just told me that in order to get Jay's attention, you should be curating the best content in your marketplace so that you're paying attention. I mean, that's what I heard loud and clear. That's
absolutely
what you're paying attention to.
I think the future is in the librarian business. I really do. I think curation, you know, we're just touching the top of the spear of the flood of content that's going to be created in this world. As more and more companies come to believe what you and I believe about being publishers, you think there's a lot of content now. Just wait 3 years from now. At some point, librarian will be king. That successful curation will really be a leadership position. What that requires for individual companies, though, is getting out of the mindset that you can only draw attention to your own stuff. And once you make that psychological leap that says, you know what, our competitors create good content, and other people in our industry create good content, and it is our responsibility as a trusted brand to draw attention to good content regardless of author, that's the trick, right? And that's not easy for every company to do, but once they get to that point, then you can play that librarian role, and it opens up an entire field of participatory options that you don't have if you're just like, it has to be written by us.
Mm-hmm. But you and I have been saying it for a long time. The difference between media companies and non-media companies is non-existent today.
Yeah.
It's just how you want to look at it.
The difference is attitude. That's all it is.
That's it. Jay Bear, I can't thank you enough for the interview. Fantastic. Congratulations on all your success, and we look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks so much. You as well.